Welcome to the GoTo Podcast. Each episode covers the brightest and boldest ideas from the world's leading experts in software development. Tune in for practical lessons, compelling theories, and plenty of inspiration. GoTo gathers the brightest minds in the software community to help developers tackle projects today, plan for tomorrow, and create a better future. Stay up to date with the latest in tech through GoTo's top-rated events held online and in person in cities like Amsterdam, London, Copenhagen, and Chicago, and by subscribing to the GoTo Conferences YouTube channel, where you can find thousands more high-quality dev talks. Learn more at gotopia.tech.
Hi, everyone. I'm Sophie Frymuth. I'm here today to speak to Stephanie Stimak about her new book, Design for Developers, that's coming out. And you get to hear a little bit of how Stephanie came up with her book, who she is, what she's meaning to convey, and how she can help you. The book has already been out in preprint, so I had a glimpse, and it's very good. But I want to hear it all from her. Hi, Stephanie. How are you doing today?
Hi, Sophie. I'm great. Thank you.
Are you ready to tell us everything about the book?
Yes.
We're going to stick to the book today and you, but there's a little bit of you as well, because I know this book has been a long, not too long in the making. I think you had the idea quite a while ago already. No, you were thinking of that book.
Well, yeah. So I think it was, it was in 2021 towards the end of the year. Manning Publications actually approached me about writing a book about design. And it was something sort of in the back of my head, like wanting to write a book, but never really like seriously considered it until they approached me. And then they did. And so, yeah, it's felt like a long time coming to me, definitely.
And now 2022, 2023, and we know these have been difficult years, but they approached you because you have quite an experience talking about design to developers. And I think your background is really important because it really explains why the book is a direct continuation of what you have been doing and just bringing this message out, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it is. So I started my career, like I went to school for design. And in my mind, I was always going to be a graphic designer. And I started my career out that way. And then in my second full-time job, I started doing web design, and I was the one responsible for like the UX, the visual design, and then I would even go on to do the front-end development bit of it. And so I was doing the whole process. And then after 4 years at that agency, I was hired at Microsoft, and I was sort of doing the same thing, but I was on the web browser team, and I was working specifically with developers and continuing that design. And I was actually building for developers. So I was building developer tools and really, really got deep into that space. In working with developers, a lot of the feedback I would hear is many of them want to know how to design. But like don't know where to start. And so they can go build a website, but they don't have those core fundamentals to make it look polished. And so that's really where this book focuses, is building up those skills.
Building up those skills for developers to get to a polished look. And these words come up over in the book, and they come even in the table of contents. Can I take a little step back? And when you talk about design, and you've already mentioned UX design and visual design, what is your definition of design as a whole?
Oh, as a whole. Design is the visual communication of ideas.
All kinds of ideas?
Yeah. All kinds of ideas.
And where does the polish need to come in? And where do you see the design coming from needing a polish? Like, where does it get to typically? And where did you see that gap starting to come in for lack of, I guess, skills, first of all, because I know your book focuses a lot on transmitting those skills. Is there even a lack of awareness in that there is a polish possible?
So again, based on my conversations with people, people can see that something doesn't quite look right. And usually a lot of that comes down to really basic things like spacing, the size of fonts, like not knowing sort of how to build a system to apply to a design. So like not knowing how to size your fonts, the space between things. And a lot of problems can actually be solved just by focusing on spacing and sizing and knowing how to apply that cohesively throughout the site. And that is something, or your app. And just doing that can really make a world of difference in a design and how it looks.
And you have worked directly with developers for developers. So I guess they got to see the design process much closer than they normally would. There are still so many products and projects where there is a handover between design and development, where there are static deliverables. There is sometimes zero communication. In your experience, is that where the problem starts for developers needing that extra bit of help? Or does it run more deeply that developers really need a basis of design to really excel at front-end development?
I think it depends first on sort of the team that you're in. If you have a design team and a development team, and that's the environment that you're in, I don't necessarily think it's required you have a basis in, like, design skills knowledge, but I think it can be incredibly beneficial just for the communication aspect between the development team and the design team, because the sooner you get involved in the design process as a developer, you can help designers, you can help identify the points where things may not work from a technical standpoint. And so a lot of my book talks about like trying to reduce that like cycle of churn and doing unnecessary work and speeding up the process with communication. But the other side of it is to like on some teams that I've worked on, just being able to identify where something doesn't look right in terms of spacing, or if things look too big in a user interface, being able to identify that and then go fix that and have a designer review it instead of a designer going and basically building out a whole new mock-up to fix that is incredibly beneficial, because that's not the best use of a designer's time. Like trying to like fine-tune those spacing issues or font size issues, and they can focus on some of the bigger like UX problems and usability. So there's a couple different like messages in the book, but I think one of the key messages in the book is about just getting those base design skills so that you can communicate well with your designer and help your design team be more effective and focus on bigger problems than something small like spacing or a font size.
And this is where both your experience coming out of design school and having worked as at the edge of design into development seems to really kick in. So to take it back, communicating clearly with your designers. And I know there has been a lot of work in the design community to go and learn about development. Designers are encouraged to code. Designers are encouraged to go and learn about development approaches and techniques, such as, for example, Agile. And this is where you're turning that picture around and saying, developers get better and do better work and bring more value and avoid waste, which is not an agile, but it's a lean concept. They avoid waste by getting those basic design skills and being able to come in and support the design team. There's a very cohesive and collaborative approach that you are communicating, isn't there?
Yes. Yeah. So so many of my roles have been, I've been working on products for developers with developers, and working with, I've been the designer and I've also been a product manager working with the design team, trying to direct the design and development team together. And just clear communication is always so key. And especially when you're working in a fast-paced environment, like a startup, being able to move quickly and not have to wait on a designer to do something for you is so, so critical. And I there's going back to the should designers code thing, like just started talking about a tweet recently on Twitter about this. It came up again. And the point with designers learning to code or developers learning design isn't that you're going to be an expert at either of those things. So if I'm a developer, as your design counterpart, I'm not expecting you to be a top tier designer at all. But knowing the concepts, and again, coming back to communication and collaboration, knowing those concepts will help us work better together. And so that's really, really, I think, the core message of the book.
And you say it clearly. It is one of your points in the book that says you won't be design experts, but we'll be design smart. And this idea of smartness really echoes to me. And I was wondering if you could share an example of where you have seen this kind of design smart build up with developers and take the work to a different direction, possibly hopefully a better direction. Is that where you've seen experience and where you've fed some of the theories in the book?
I haven't really seen it anywhere yet. And I think that's, again, why I wrote the book, is to help sort of start that culture of being design smart, but not necessarily being a design expert, so that we can, when we're building products, we are building the best thing possible.
And this is where your book comes in a very timely manner, because indeed, I think there are a lot of very advanced, hyper-specialized design books. I have in my bookcase books on color theory and typography, which at the same time assume you have the basis. They assume you've been to the School of Design. They bring some concepts that are intelligible to someone who hasn't. But taking it around and starting at the, back to basics to get smart about it, to understand the bigger picture and start seeing by yourself what's going on, starts changing the game. But what's interesting, I think, is asking developers to look at design is asking them to see something different. I'm amused by the fact that developers need to have a very binary look and understanding of the world, because ultimately computers are binary. The command is do or don't, execute, don't execute. And all of a sudden, we are inviting them to break away from this binary. Will this code roll out to deliver what we want, into looking at it in depth, in colors, in volumes, in spacing, in shapes of objects, including letters. Do you think that everyone can become design smart?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think a big misconception is that designers, good designers, are just born with that. And even as a designer, in school, I always felt a little bit out of my depth. I had an eye for it, but when I looked at the top students in the class, I was like, oh, I don't know how to get to that level. But it's, you can train your eye, and just by copying sort of aesthetics and looks that you like, you train your mind to do that yourself. And so everything can be learned. I feel sometimes there's a little bit of gatekeeping too with design. Oh no, you're not a designer, so you shouldn't touch the design system, or you shouldn't touch the color of that button, or you can learn all of this and you can become a better designer, just like you can become a better developer. Like, sure, let's say you know HTML and CSS and JavaScript, but if you want, you can go learn another discipline. I know it's a different side of the brain, but design is the same thing.
It is the same thing. It's about imagining what the world could be. And what I really like with the book is that you've brought a very holistic view of the book. And if I name some of the titles of the chapters, in chapter 2, we have the design fundamentals. In chapter 3, user experience basics. In chapter 4, user research. In chapter 5, user experience design. And I, as a UX designer, I appreciate you've broken it down, but then you continue, you go to web layout. But it's not just web layout in chapter 6, it's web layout and composition. In the anecdote of the kind of the rainbow of skills that you've drawn it, and it continues, you know, enhancing web layout with animation, choosing and working with typography, and then color theory. Is that the order you've experienced building projects well? Is that where it all should be at? Or is this rather a sum of techniques, that this is a walkthrough that's suggested, and just pick and mix as you need it, depending where you come in, depending where you're at and what's needed?
Yeah. So the way the book is laid out is how I have typically experienced building products, just because, and I would say this is it's a suggested way to approach things. If you have never sort of built or designed something from scratch, you can, and maybe all the different parts aren't necessarily applicable to you. Maybe you're not doing research, so you can skip that. And then I would say it's definitely laid out though in three sort of chunks. Like, we have the design fundamentals, which are visual design fundamentals, but they come before everything else in the book, because in UX design, in the UX research and sort of content planning part of it, even though you're not visually designing anything, you still need to understand those concepts, those fundamentals, to build relationships between the content and know sort of how to do that. And so that's why the fundamentals come sort of at the beginning. And then we go into research, and then the UX design part. And then the visual design part is the web layout and composition and typography. I wouldn't necessarily say that, like, that particular section doesn't have to be done in that order. That's just the way that you could approach it. The end part is focused on testing and sort of how to iterate on a design. Again, you may not be in that situation. You may just be building a website for, like, let's say you're a freelancer, you're just building a website for a client, and then that's it. You're not necessarily going to do all that iteration. It's not a product you're designing. And so it's pick and mix. It's almost like a choose your own adventure, kind of, depending on the context you're in.
And choose your own adventure, I think, is very much how work is becoming in the digital world, because it's, let me see if it's been your experience as well. I think for both designers and developers, there are two very conflicting trends. There is one that says you need to be hyper specialized. You need to be excellent at Python. You need to be excellent at Ruby on Rails. You need to be excellent at React. You need to be also a full stack developer. So there's a number of these things you need to be excellent at. And yet, the jobs you're brought in may ask you to dip a little in all of these, to work with a team that has similar strengths, so you don't have to be the expert. And at some point, I think even in very balanced team, there comes a moment when you're almost alone. People are on holiday. They're all at a meeting. There is something that needs to be done. And then you are all alone. And then you get to pick your adventure. Do I want to do a bit of research? Oh, the UX designer is not here this week. Maybe I go and complement my understanding. Has it been your experience that the jobs are changing and the skill sets that are required to do fine in most situations are also changing. And so I need to keep learning and keep spreading out and getting more and more basics and more domains.
So in my opinion, at least from a development and design side, like I'm gonna use my previous job as an example. Like we hired very quickly and had, I'd say, about 10 to 15 developers, and they were all on their own teams. But what ended up happening was the ones who had skills for roles that were still open, even though they were hired, let's say, to do JavaScript, they had Python experience. And so they got pulled in to do the Python work and backend work. And I think it's a good thing to be specialized in a certain area, but still having that, at least a basis of knowledge of what else is out there is incredibly helpful. And I think that is going to make you more appealing as a employee. If you can, and it's going to also open up more opportunities for you too. Like maybe you get bored doing just Python and backend stuff, but let's say the company needs someone to do front end stuff. If you sort of like that context switching, I think that makes you more valuable, depending on, again, the environment. I think if you want a fast-paced startup environment, that broad set of skills is incredibly valuable. But I'd say having an area that you're specialized in is incredibly important as well.
And I appreciate that you finally brought the book that helps to keep on the side. And I think it's going to be one of these books that people have in their bookcase and they don't refer to it every day. I don't think that's an everyday reference. I think it's a from time to time, oh, I remember I've seen about this and let me do a bit of that. In your experience of the many chapters, and I know each of these could be a book on their own, but is there one already that you although you've provided the basics in the book, because that's what this book does. It gives the basics. You know, there's an interest, you know, there's a curiosity, or you know, there's a need for more deep skills that start with the basics, but might be more. Is there a second book in you, Stephanie? Tell me more.
Is there a second book in me? If I were to write a second book, I actually don't know if it would be focused on design basics. I do talk about designing for developers because there is a aspect of user experience that is focused on developer experience. And I think that would be a really interesting book to write. However, if we're going to talk about of what's already in the book, color is such anyone who's not a designer seems to always have a problem with color and how do I apply a color palette and the psychology of color. And I have so many books. I have a book on, it's literally the interaction of color and how do colors interact together. And you can do, you can really transform a website's look and feel with just color. And so that would be a whole other second book. But if I don't know if I would write that personally.
Just yet. Let's have the first one out. I think color theory is so interesting because color brings so many aspects. There is, you've mentioned, the psychology of color, the emotional attachments. There are strong cultural connotations to color and, you know, very simple things. Red in Asia is marriage. Blue in the West is corporate. Like there are those big things that can be turned around and broken, by the way. They're not carved in stone. But they also bring in the fact that colors together may work or not work. And we start slowly going into the domain of accessibility and understanding why a dark gray font on a pale gray background is may look good, but it's not great. So accessibility, I've seen it as not mentioned, but a running theme of like, just make it work. And I think in the polish, it comes in that this is where we start understanding why things work and don't, and we start making choices. And this also takes us to the capacity to see colors. In your experience, have you encountered difficulties? Colors are difficult, but there's this other difficulty, which is about perceiving colors. Mm-hmm. And in particular, I'm talking about forms of color blindness. And I don't know if it's been your experience, but I've seen amongst developers who are the ones I've worked with are, I would say, a vast majority of Caucasian males, there is a certain color blindness. Mm-hmm. Do you have tips and tricks for identifying that one of the issues might be a form of color blindness, which means that, yeah, it is a bit harder to see, to gauge colors well?
Yeah. So the only sort of tip I have when it comes to like colors and accessibility in particular to like color blindness is there is a, I think it's a browser extension that lets you, it's a tool and you, it will actually change the page that you're on to, you can or it might actually be in the browser developer tools too. I'll have to check. I can't remember, but there is a developer tool out there, and it will change the color palette of the web page that you're on to reflect what it looks like to someone with color blindness. And so you can use that tool to help identify points where, even though two colors may seemingly work together and may be accessible or look accessible to someone who's not colorblind, using that tool will let you see, oh, this is going to be an issue.
Yeah. And this all brings us to the fact that our perceptions are individual, and yet there is a very collective perception. And that collective perception, if I go on with that theme, starts going towards the I like, I don't like. Mm-hmm. And I think what's interesting with development is there is no liking or not liking the code. The code works or doesn't. The code compiles quickly or compiles slow. It calls in, you know, millions of microservices or it doesn't. When we start going towards design, the first thing that walks into the door is I like it, I don't like it.
Yep.
And as a designer, it's been my experience that a lot of the discussions I've had with teammates, with stakeholders, have been along the who likes the most or what is liked the most. What's been your experience of dealing with that aspect of design that developers won't have seen, I think, in their interactions with stakeholders and colleagues? How do you handle the I don't like it comments and feedback?
So I always ask why. Why don't you like it? Because there's going to be two sort of answers. They're going to say, because I have a personal preference, I don't like this color, or they have an actual reason. And so one of my favorite like anecdotes around client feedback is actually about a client I worked with at an agency. They worked on the Microsoft military affairs team and we were building a website for them, the agency that I was at was. And I had used the color red somewhere. It was part of the Microsoft brand palette, obviously. Like, so I was using red as like a button color. And did the first design review and the client immediately said, I don't like the red because it's aggressive. And I was like, oh, that totally makes sense. Like in the context, like we're thinking in the context of someone who's former military, the users that we're targeting for this site are people who are just coming out of the military and trying to build up a new skill set for a career. And he was like, it's too aggressive and will have a negative like connotation to a lot of people. That I was like, this is like, there's a reason I still talk about this feedback, because that's a perfect example of like good color feedback. On the opposite end of the spectrum, there was another project I was working on at Microsoft with my team of developers. I was designing it and building the front end, and they built out the back end. But we were sort of our own customer, essentially. And so we did a design review. One guy didn't like the color that I had picked. And I was like, why? I just don't like it. Well, why? Couldn't give like a valid reason. So, and everyone else was fine with it. So that like, that's not actionable feedback to me. I need to be able to understand why this isn't working for you so that I can make it more effective. I think one thing that people lose sight of, like a stakeholder, when you have someone building your product or designing your product or designing your website, it's not about your preference. You think that it's important to you because it's your product, but you're actually trying to target a certain set of customers, and what their preference is actually more important than what your preference is. You should still like the design, but if the only feedback that you can provide is, well, I just don't like that color, and your designer has a like valid reason that they're using that color because it pertains to the audience that you're targeting, like it's going to be hard for them to make adjustments just based off of, well, I don't like it.
I love those anecdotes because they absolutely, first of all, I absolutely have experienced the same thing. And you've broken it down into, I think, one of the fundamentals that design has to fight, which is we get into power battles in meetings of, I don't like it. And I wonder if somehow this person wanted to say, well, I'm the most important person in the room. So when I say I don't like it, you should all be jumping. It seems like it didn't work. But also the fact that ultimately, there are two exceptions. It's a hobby and we are building a website or a product just for the fun of it because it's, we just get kicks out of it. And then, yeah, pick the color you like. And the other extreme is, you are actually an artist or a designer, a fashion designer. And it needs to echo you. So if you don't like that shade of blue and you are the creative director of, you know, a fashion house, yeah, it has to work. But then it means, you know, find the fun, like the blue, it has to be me. And everywhere else, there is color theory. There is this wonderful tool. And I think you've expressed kindly that there are ways of approaching things because it's about delivering efficiency. It's about delivering value, adding to the product through those means that are now, for a developer, beyond the code working. The code also delivers an experience that enhances the power of the functionality. I don't just click a button and I see that, I don't know, my order's gone through. I see that the order's gone through and I get a feeling that it's going fast and it's precise and it's gone to multiple places at once. So great things are happening. And color palettes are, I think, one of the angles that often seem like they're perfect. Oh, you have a color palette, just pick one. Mm-hmm. And yet so often you can't use this color because it's for an alert. You can't use that color because it's a primary call to action. You cannot use this color because it's only used in the logo and never anywhere else. And now there is a simple method in the book to come in and get a bit of understanding of where is my wiggle room.
Yeah.
And a lot of the points you're bringing are in design, you need to go look not for the obvious, but you need to look for the wiggle room. And yes. I think this is a mind shift of compared to development, where development, it works or it doesn't, your code compiles or it doesn't, it runs, it doesn't. There is no wiggle room. Design is all about the wiggle.
Yeah. Yep, exactly.
And developing this sense, I think, is where also you spend a lot of time in the early chapters. This is not just a how-to manual, the checklists. There is a lot. I really like the tone of voice you have in the book, which is a we. It's a very inclusive tone of voice. You are taking the reader along the journey. It's not made for any specific kind of person. It's not for the freelancer. It's not for the person who's in a big team. It's for everyone who it develops and it just wants to get their head above the wall and have a bit of a look at what goes on. In the structure of the book, you've really made it not as just a checklist, do this, this, do that. It's a little bit of a journey with just enough. And every chapter ends with a summary. Mm-hmm. Anyone who's in a hurry can just read the summary. I appreciate, however, that you really constructed the chapters at a fast pace and constructing the layout of the book so that you apply your own advice. And I think the way the book is constructed with the titles, the blocks of content really works well. And if someone looks through the book, they can already see the advice you're communicating applied. Give the structure, yes. Give the colors. Can you tell us more about that?
Well, yeah. So I know we sort of talked about like the three different parts and how it's constructed, but we're literally designing a website in the book. And so as you go through, there are like a couple sort of one-off exercises, but when we get to chapter 10, we take literally everything that we just read. And then we just apply that in the order that the book was written, so that you can just sort of quickly. I've tried to make it very step by step, to make it as clear as possible. Like this is an approach. It doesn't have to be the approach, but it is an approach. If you have no idea where to start or how to sort of work through this.
Yeah. And I love the structure because when you look at, I don't know if everybody does that, but I kind of look at the table of content and I try to see where is this going? Where could I use it? And I got to chapter 10, which is called building a website. And I'm like, oh, okay. So we're not doing all the work. But this is where it does a little subtlety. This is the exercise part. This is the, you can go and test everything I've just talked about and you've read about and just have a bit of a play with it. And I guess you chose website because it's just an easy start. And at some point, we still all do websites, even though we say we do apps and products. And we keep reinventing things, but they're, you know, most of them display in the browser at some point or another.
Yeah.
And you touch on so many topics. I mean, if I just look at the introduction of what this chapter covers, it tells me about building a landing page based on requirements given to us by a client. I think for a developer, this is great. I think they often come in very late in the product development process. The design's brief been given, a design team has gone around, or designer's gone around, or a client, which can be an internal client, has given, you know, has long thought about what they want and the requirements are just so constraining. Now, this is, you know, by the time it gets to developers, this problem of design decisions that are not implementable rise up and throw everything in the air. So this is really an invitation to come and play early. And do you think that people are going to get opportunities to do that in their jobs? Like, how can you invite someone to go and do that and invite themselves early on in the design process, not that they're armed with the content of the book?
If you're a developer and you're not being invited to those early meetings where planning is happening, message, or if you have a product manager who manages that, message them to ask to be involved. Tell your designer that you would like to be involved more early on in the process. And most people shouldn't have an issue with that. Like some people might feel maybe a little territorial, but it's all about better collaboration, delivering a better product, and getting a different perspective. Ask your team members how you can be involved earlier on in the process. And doing that will help shift the culture. And then if you're a product manager who is not doing that, you should be doing that. You should have your team involved when you have the requirements and start brainstorming. Like my experience with designing products and trying to come up with ideas for features as a PM, I've been in the situation where we have a VP, we have our designer, we have another PM, we have a developer. Everyone has different ideas and they're all valid. And that's how you get the best ideas, is having all those different perspectives in the room.
Getting to be involved earlier is, again, what I think really is great with the book is that you're not telling people how to do their jobs, but you're opening so many little pockets of knowledge. Have you had this experience of getting little pockets of knowledge open to you in your career? Are you playing back your own experience of growing and developing and learning more and being in more places to?
Yeah, I feel like my career, I'll just say I never expected to end up where I am right now. I mean, I'm currently doing consulting work because I got caught up in the last tech layoff wave. But I started as a designer and I thought that that was going to be it. And quite frankly, like my getting hired at Microsoft changed my life. I ended up doing, and I really, really loved that job. And because I was in such a unique position, I was a product manager, but I was doing design work. And then it shifted into, I was also doing developer advocacy work. And I went like I actually know quite a bit about the browser and how the browser works and technical specifications. Like my name is on a W3C spec, and you, Stephanie, 10 years ago would have been like, what is that? Like no idea. And so, and after leaving Microsoft, I sort of shifted into full product management mode, but I'm still a designer and I still consider myself a front end developer. And I think it has benefited me greatly. And I definitely feel like my opportunities for work, are much more broad. Like I can pick if I want to go back to design or do I want to be in product and so that has benefited me. And it also just makes me incredibly hungry to learn more. And so, yeah, I think that answers your question.
It does bring it to, I think, to everyone that there is this constant paradox and tension that technology, as it develops, requires more and more hyper-specialized skills, but it also requires of people to always stay a generalist. And you might be the very, very, very best at this language, at this framework, but you also need to be able to step out and work with the rest of the teams. And teams are getting bigger and bigger every day. Design and development, I think, should be at the core of it. We've got all the QA. We've got content that is a domain that is not quite growing as fast as it should, because integrating content and content libraries and structures is actually a monster that comes and bites very often. Soft skills all around, but also deep technical skills. And it keeps going around. And I think you've described very well that you're not in a position of knowing so many domains that you can still hyper-specialize in one. You can come in and take a job as a designer tomorrow. You can come in and take a job as a front end. And I think what's great about your book is that I'm hoping it invites more developers to dip their toes into design and expand there and see the fun that there is in understanding the bigger world, but also contribute so that this fundamental of technical feasibility in design starts getting addressed. Because I've also been on project where, you know, it gets to tech and they're like, oh, can do. And like, we've spent 6 months designing this.
Yep.
And for you know, the horse that liked to shoe, for the lack of having the one guy who knew the bandwidth of the internet in that very location, 6 months of work were thrown out the door. We keep spreading the message. So keep little basics and keeping dipping these kind of books you know, are so helpful. And I'm grateful that you brought this in. I know you're also doing a lot of work to continue helping. There's not just the book, because you speak at conferences as well, don't you?
I do. So I've been taking a little break because speaking at conferences is a lot, but I will be starting that up again soon. But yeah, I speak about design and development. The last couple of talks I've given are on dual screen design and development. So I just got excited again because obviously Microsoft has the Surface Duo foldable phone, but Google just released their foldable phone. And so I'm excited about that because there's so much cool stuff you can do on the web to design for design layouts that adapt to those screens. And then the other talk that I like to give is on PWAs and design and development considerations. So I give a lot of like design development, like intersection talks. So, and I love it.
And you will be speaking more. So these conferences are already recorded and accessible. Just look up Stephanie's name, look up her book. And finally, so you are working right now as a consultant, right? Some people can come and grab you.
Yes, absolutely.
And you're based out of the UK. Tell us more a little bit how they can get a hold of you.
Right. So I am based, we'll say based out of Europe for the moment. But I also work with people in the US. My website is stephaniesteinbeck.com. I have contact information on there. I'm also on Twitter. I'm at Seaotta, Seaotta. And I'm probably on there the most, but, considering the state of the platform, find my website, my email address is on there and you can reach out, and I do, I do quite a bit. I just got done doing a design assessment of someone's website where I just went through and was like, these colors aren't accessible. The spacing is off. Like, here's how you can do to improve it, or I can design for you. So I design websites, logo. I'm a full stack designer. You could say
you're a full unicorn. You're a full unicorn. You can do it all. And I'm glad you brought the book out. That helps to do more. I know I will certainly be keeping in my bookcase because I tell you, it's white spacing. I'm a UX designer. I am not a visual designer. I know my eyes don't see what I've seen some amazing visual designers do. Like, they can spot things. I'm like, my brain's not wired the same, but I'm so happy to have a resource that I can use and refer to and just get things a little bit better and make it a little bit of a better world and develop new skills. So that brings us to This Is a Better World, for having your book in it. Thank you for writing it, because it's hard work.
Thank you.
Very hard work. Coming out soon, you're available for questions. Let's hope Twitter continues to host wonderful design and development conversations. Otherwise, we'll find a way of connecting through the metaverse that is this world. And thank you very much to GoTo for having us have this conversation.
Yes, thank you so much.
An absolute pleasure, Stephanie. You take care.
You too.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the GoTo Podcast. Head over to gotopia.tech to discover lots more content from the brightest minds in software development.